Poetry on the Radio, we talk with Barina South, a Barkindji poet and artist who writes often about land, culture, and history as those relate to First Nations people in Australia and to her own life. I'm Kimberly K. Williams. Barina South has recently published her first poetry collection, Makara, with Recent Work Press. The title is the Barkindji word for rain. Barina is also a visual artist and academic who is particularly committed to Aboriginal women's autobiographical narratives. She has long worked at local and federal levels in collection management, curatorship, and public programs, including the repatriation of ancestors to country. Among her literary activities, she has been awarded a Varuna First Nations Residential Fellowship and been published in various journals in Australia and India. She has taken part in several international initiatives, including as artist in residence at the Sharjah Art Museum in the United Arab Emirates and the Swarovski Crystal World in Austria, and is a member of the Canberra Critics Circle. I asked Barina South about how her book came together. Your book came out in 2024, Makara. It's Recent Work Press, and they did give us a copy of the book for the interview. Thanks to Shane for that. It's your first book.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to know about the process of how it came to be.
Okay. I made a plan to publish my debut poetry collection in 2024. Fortunately, I had previous discussions with Shane at Recent Work Press, and January in 2024, I got an email from him saying he'd like to see a manuscript. So I thought, this is fantastic. I thought it was going to take a little bit longer to get the debut poetry collection out, but, things happen for a reason. And so I started collating all the poems that I currently had. Was awarded the First Nations Varuna Fellowship in January in 2024 as well. So I used the time at that residency to create new work, revisit some of my older poems, just did some redrafting and collated everything as a manuscript and handed it over to Shane to have a look at.
One of the things that as a poet myself oftentimes vexes me is the order.
Yeah.
How did you determine the order for the manuscript?
I want people to feel something and I wanted to really grab their attention straight away. So that's why I made the deliberate choice of putting the first couple of poems at the beginning of the book. And they're the ones that really are quite hard-hitting and make you definitely feel something. So I really wanted them at the start. And then I wanted to then start dipping into poems about country. And so you start moving into poems that have got a mixture of feeling things and a little bit about country. And then you go into country and then there's a little bit more poems with that feature language and country. And we sort of go deep, deep, deep in. And then I wanted to bring people back out with some poems that I'd been experimenting as a result of doing a workshop with Felicity Plunkett. Put those sort of towards the end. And then I really wanted to wrap the book up in such a way that left people wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I decided to put those couple of poems at the end of the book to just tease people to want to read my second collection.
So there's a real deliberate journey here.
Yes, it is.
Since you mentioned leaving people wanting more, what more is happening?
Well, I received a mentorship through Marion ACT Writing to be mentored by Dan Hogan, an Australian poet. So I'm currently working with Dan. We've got some ideas of what my next collection will look like. I'm really wanting to write about travel and moving through country. So we're just playing with a few ideas at the moment. I attended a conference in Auckland, a poetic inquiry conference, and I met a lot of poets. It was all poets at this conference. It was really, really amazing. So I made a lot of contacts and I'm wanting to build on those relationships and collaborations with other people across the world,
mm-hmm.
which will feed into my next book, which is, as I mentioned, is about travel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm currently working on now. And I just applied for a writing residency to write in Bangalore southern India to write with the indigenous people there, the Adivasi. So fingers crossed I get that, which will be fantastic.
As a first book, as a debut book, how would you characterize this? Almost all of the poems are from the eye point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a single speaker?
Yes, single speaker. I'd say it's autobiographical.
It is? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I never want to assume that, you know, in a poem, but I think that does make the startling poems all the more startling.
Yeah. So they're definitely based on experiences, things I've witnessed, things that I've seen, things that I've felt, because that's how I was writing, not knowing they were going to be in a collection. So as writers, we're just writing, and that was just coming out of me. And then, as a result, they came together in this collection. So the first poem I'll read is Barka. Barka. Bulging banks, sodden with water. Nature's refuse washes away downstream. Dry branches bounce to the rhythm of the current. Ripples form, turn, and disappear. Tree trunks freshly painted with the river flow turn to marble. Scars made by the old people, reminders of past floods. Farm fences invade the river straight up the other side. They fence the rivers too. Crumpled water tanks lie on their sides, kerosene tins, bed frames, broken glass remains in memorial to those who once lived by the Barka. Listen carefully. You can imagine the women from the mission talking as they take care of their children playing in the river, a place of respite from government gaze and control. Gudumba. I was here marked only by the words on the page. Abstention from the outside world affording space for deep listening. Gudumba, 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 Gudumba. Words roll lightly across my tongue, drink it in like sweet water from the swollen Banksia flower after the rain. Words wake a conversation, a serration that comes up from deep within the valley floor. They remember I have been here before. A long time ago. Body is sore, assailed by doubts caused by unsympathetic orators of past critics, time spent lamenting for unfinished poems. That sit just outside my window, hanging in the morning mist, just out of reach, or stolen at dusk, carried on the eternal call of the Currawongs.
This would be from the part of the book where we're in country.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The Barka poem, it does something with the river. I think of a river as a timeless place.
Mm.
And I think this poem thinks of a river that way too.
Yeah.
By the time we get to the end. And then the Gudumba poem, it and many of the poems intersperse here and there, are really thinking about language.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting to me since there are multiple languages in this book.
Mm.
I wondered if you could speak to that.
Yes, so I wrote Barka actually on the river, fishing with my husband and son. The Barka is the Barkindji word for the Darling River. I'm a Barkindji woman, mm-hmm. So Barkindji means people of the river. So while they were fishing, I was looking around and thinking and writing. My family came off the Brewarrina mission, so this is the mission that's mentioned in the poem. And I'd been out to that mission a few times. So that was me just observing around. And also, as you're going along the river, you can see the scars on the tree where the old people have taken the bark off to make canoes during flood time.
Mm-hmm.
And so my nan was born on this mission. And when I go out there, I often think about the women and what life was like on the mission for women,
mm-hmm.
Looking after their children, looking after their homes, making sure that the government wouldn't take their children from them. And so I wanted to, at the end, refer to women spending time playing with their children in the river to show that, you know, that whilst they were living on a government reserve or mission, that they were also women, mothers looking after their children as well and having that special time just out of the gaze of the mission manager, spending time by the river with them, with their children. So Gudumba, I have to say that the word Gudumba is Darug and Gunungurra word, Pilkatoomba. And I wrote this whilst at Varuna Writer Centre, which is based at Katoomba. And this was when I went for a walk in the bush. I grew up in the Blue Mountains. So places where I went during the residency I'd been previously. And when I stood and looked out into the valley, I could feel like the people in the valley were watching me and that they were kind of recognising me because I'd been there before. But because it'd been such a long time, I had that disconnect. So that influenced the writing of this poem, where the voices come up, Gudumba, Gudumba, from the valley floor. So that's what influenced this poem.
The sound Gudumba, to me, is like a bass drum.
Mm.
I mean, it's just really a solid sounding word.
Mm.
And I love the idea of the sounds. And then the line following it, words roll lightly across my tongue. That's a really interesting, you know, you've got this heavy sounding word or this drumming type of word. And it's an interesting contrast.
And I guess that those words in that part of the poem is me re-saying or speaking that word. I hadn't spoken that word, Gudumba, since I spent time in Katoomba.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it was a bit awkward, but then I just said it and said it over and over again. It was my tongue remembered it. And then it was sort of like the words were just rolling lightly on the tongue. It wasn't too difficult. And then I go into drinking it like sweet water. Like it was just so nourishing to be in that place again and to say those words. I felt nourished.
That comes through. And just the idea of words wake a conversation. I mean, what a beautiful way to think of both words and conversing, right? Mm. Something that's alive and can be wakened.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So that's what I felt like when I was saying the words, the people from down in the valley, we were starting to connect.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's what that poem's based on.
Who did the drawings?
My brother did the drawings. Mm. Yeah, so both he and I did an undergraduate degree in visual arts.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a practicing visual artist, but I ended up moving into a very small apartment at Waterloo, so I couldn't create any of my artworks. So then that directed me into writing, and my brother continued with the visual arts.
Mm.
So because it was my debut collection he's... I guess in here as well, family are always in here somewhere, people that you love and people that you connect with. And so I asked him, would he do some illustrations for the book? And he was a bit hesitant at first, but he decided that, yeah, no, he would do it. So he did a series of drawings, and we picked the right best ones that we thought would work well in the book. And we just chose, I think there's about four in here.
Mm-hmm.
So just enough just to lead the reader through the collection.
Did he base it, like, did he read the manuscript and then do the drawings?
Yes, he did.
My favorite drawing in here happens to be at the whales.
Yeah, a lot of people said they'd like to turn that into a tattoo. So so it was actually a great day when I did launch the collection in Queanbeyan. I had one launch at Smith's, which was in the evening. It was great. Then I organised a launch in Queanbeyan. There was about 80 people came along.
Mm.
And so what was great was that people were going up to my brother and getting him to sign where the pictures were.
Yeah.
So it was like together we were celebrating my words and his drawings.
Yeah.
And it just made for a really lovely day. Yeah, it was really great. And I'm glad that he did it because he was, as I said, hesitant.
Mm-hmm.
But, he did a few others as well, but we thought these were the ones that best suited the collection. So we went with these ones.
I wondered if we could go farther into the book and just talk about the poem We.
Yeah.
It's obviously a tip of the cap to Gwendolyn Brooks.
That's correct.
We Real Cool.
Yep.
And reading it, it almost made me wonder why more poets don't do this. It's both a nod, but then an extension.
Yeah.
So would you read this one?
Yeah, I'd love to. So this was during a workshop I did with Felicity Plunkett, Australian poet. And this was one of the activities or tasks that we did during the workshop. So this is the poem We, after Gwendolyn Brooks. We. When no one wants us anymore, we seek out our own, those who really understand what is real, abandoned children, bruised, molested, stinking and starved, don't let on, be cool. Otherwise you stand out, become prey. We stick by each other, all that's left. Learn quick the rules of street school, important lessons so we can pick them. Those that lure us with a meal in a warm bed, they lurk scurrying back before it gets late. That is why we bash and steal, seize opportunities at any cost. When they arise, then strike, share the spoils, then indulge, spirits so high to not walk straight. Our mantra, we spit off the edge of the world, echoing off derelict walls. You, me, we laugh, sing, indulge in sin. Sun rises, we sleep. I see her thin brown skin. She tells me she's a djinn from a big river town. Now we a team. My role from then on, protecting her from the jazz of cruel customers who now know her as Bella June. Every year we promise to get clean. With the cash she brings in, live like kings, not afraid to die. Then one night the curlew cried, and I knew the phone would ring soon.
It's amazing the way you've picked up every part of the poem, Brooks's poem, and then it's woven through.
Yeah, so every after Gwendolyn Brooks' We, you can see that every last word of the sentence is her poem.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we real cool, we left school, we lurk late, we strike straight, we sing sin, we thin gin, we jazz June, we die soon. Yeah. So that's how I woven that poem into that one.
That is so...
But taken in another direction.
But at the same time, too, I mean, there's that... This is why I love Brooks, is you don't look away with her poetry. You have to see. She makes you look. Her words make you look. Mm-hmm. And this poem does the same thing.
Mm. Yeah.
On today's episode of Poetry on the Radio, our guest is Brina South, whose debut collection, Makara, appeared in late 2024 from Recent Work Press. Poetry on the Radio producer Peter Monahan asked,
Brina, I'm really struck by some of the things that are set beside each other in your book. The first poems that you read today here were about what you see when you're on the river or what you experience, what's there. And you talked also about surveillance. So you have this whole range of witnessing. The river is sort of timeless in a sense that different times and registers are coming to you as you're there. And then when you have the more domestic sort of trouble at home sort of poems, there's that sort of sense, I mean, it's a very unsettling, the past being present and never leaving you.
Yeah, I guess because I didn't think most of these poems were going to be in a collection. I just wrote them, like as we all do, just straight from the heart and what we feel like writing at the time. I was a little bit hesitant with some of the poems in the book to have them published, but I think I'd got to that point where it's like they have to go. What's the point of just keeping them on the computer? They have to go and get some air and be read by others, and then I have to move on to the next next lot of words, collections.
Set them free, find them a home.
Yeah, yeah. And it is quite an interesting feeling once your words are published and are out in the world, it's sort of almost you lose them. They've gone, like a helium balloon that sort of you've held on to it. You know, when you're a child at a fete, you get a helium, well, this is in the old days, you used to get a helium balloon and it would tie you on the wrist and you always took it everywhere you went. And then that terrible feeling of when you accidentally let go and the balloon takes off and you just see it go. And then you get to a point where, oh, it's not coming back. So you just watch it keep going into the sky. So that's how I felt about this collection. And it's up to others to take it on, read it.
That's the gift that is poetry, is that you're letting it go in a way that you've done as much as you can to control it, right? Yep. You've put it on a page. You've arranged it a certain way. And then there's that sort of act of faith of just release and see how and where it lands. And so as Peter's mentioned, too, some of the poems are confronting. And I don't want to skip those if you wanted to read one of those. But then I also want to mention how somehow it is a journey. And in the end, the final poem, Gathering, it truly is, right? It brings it all together.
Yeah.
And I sort of marveled at that. I find it incredibly delightful when things happen in a poem or in a book, a whole book. And it's happening at several levels. And I think that's what happens with Gathering.
Yes. Yeah, so this was the last poem I wrote for the manuscript. And this was during the First Nations Fellowship at Varuna, which was in January 2024, which I knew that this would, I'd have to make a decision to, you know, finish it, finish the manuscript and get it to Shane. So I wrote this at that time. Poem's called Gathering. Gathering. On the updraft of the mist we gather, lineages like a fine silk web that connects us, invisible to others but taught to us as children. With the welcome to this country, I begin drawing the fine threads together, lyrebird and the gully. We talk about ourselves, each of us percolating on names, places, country, sifting through seaweed for precious rainbow kelp shells. In a room where I have sat before, I sit now, sharing new conversations. We begin to crisscross, twist threads of commonalities and family ties. It's the start of our goulet, our small dilly bag which will hold this experience. Inside we will place the learnings and thoughts of this moment in time to draw on later. We look without talking, raise eyebrows, laugh and take shots at each other. Silence when we talk about histories that require no words. Silence needed to heal us at our most vulnerable. Days see us weave, pluck and pull at our threads, stories plait, interlace. At midnight, the moonlight glosses pines. On another night, the wind picks up, allowing past orators of country to fill my ears with language from the valley floor, feel country on my bare skin. At the end of the week, our goulet will be complete, and each one of us will carry it with us on our journey. Filled with a chaplet of kookaburra and black cockatoo feathers, pages and napped sentences, carved paragraphs, painted chapters, and a bushel of native mint to keep us cleansed. We descend from the mountains to the plains, back across countries, to new pathways to continue weaving lineages like a fine silk web that connects us all.
It is like the perfect last poem.
Mm.
Do you know?
Yeah, so it's sort of what I wanted to do with this poem at the end was, we'll definitely write the last piece at Varuna for the manuscript. I write my best work at Varuna. And I wanted, this is about the group of First Nation writers who came together at that on the fellowship. And it's about what it is to have Aboriginal people together. And we do make those connections. You know, where are you from, who you're related to, which is your country. And that's, to me, it was sort of like there were these thin, fine, wet connections that we all have as First Nations people. And it doesn't take us very long to work out who's who and who's related to who and where they're from. And that these are these delicate threads that connect us. And that's why I say taught to us as children, because that's how we are taught to connect with our own. It's like, where you're from, and oh, who's your grandmother, and so that's why I wanted to put that in there. And when we were all together, it was like this crisscrossing of stories and threads and who knew who and who was from where. And it was like together we were weaving a gulay, which is a dilly bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea that our experience, that each of us had our gulay at the end of the experience. And that's where we put that moment of time into,
mm-hmm.
and that we walked off with our own dilly bags with this experience. And I actually wrote the last part of this poem at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and there were these big pines that were outside of the window, and the moonlight were on the pines, and it was like they were glossed in the moonlight, and it was a windy night. And then it's that thing of this idea of these people in the valley, and they were coming, their voices were coming up through the wind. And that's when I was writing the last part of the poem. And I just wanted to bring in here that the chaplet of kookaburra and black cockatoo feathers, that, you know, that's another body adornment,
mm-hmm.
that we would take with us. I really like the idea. This came to me at 3 o'clock in the morning, like nap sentences, carved paragraphs, painted chapters. It's sort of like, you know, like working stone tools or carving out of wood, like almost creating artifacts, our tools, mm-hmm. that we take with us, and that we all descend from the mountains back to our own countries to weave, to continue with the weaving of our dilly bags.
There are hints throughout many of the poems in this book, but then this last poem brings it all together. This idea that words are more than words, right? Somehow they transcend. I think anybody who appreciates poetry or writes it knows this, but to have it be paid attention to in this way, I think really underscores its importance.
Mm.
You know, what is happening here is so important, but it's kind of like a web, right? It could be easily not seen.
Mm.
You know,
yeah, it's that. And that's what I was meaning by thin spider web almost. You don't see it until sometimes, you know, you run into a spider web and get a shock. But sometimes you just get a little sunlight will just play on that web, and you'll just get a glint of it, and it's like, oh, there's a fine web there.
Mm.
And where does it go, and how's it connected, and who made that? And so that's what that was the last poem I wrote before I submitted the manuscript and decided to put that with the editor as well, K.A. Nelson, who's my editor.
Carrie.
Yeah. So we talked about putting that one at the end.
Ah.
Because then it's sort of like descend, and then we goes on to the next collection.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's what influenced me to think about writing about travel and movement across country for this next collection.
What does Makara mean?
Makara is a Barkindji word for rain, and rain plays a very important part in my life. It seems to rain at poignant points in my life, so that's why I wanted to call it Makara. I also wanted to call it Makara because to me it was sort of like I'd written these words and they were in a book, and it was like the downpour, and then once it was finished, the rain had stopped, and then there was a fresh path in front of me after the rain. And it's always that nice feeling after the rain, so that's also why I wanted to name this first collection Makara.
Today we've spoken with Barkindji poet Barina South. In coming days, you'll be able to listen back to this conversation on the ArtSound website. Go to artsound.fm and look under the Programs tab for Poetry on the Radio. There you can also listen to our earlier conversation with Barina South. I'm Kimberly K. Williams. Our guest next time on Poetry on the Radio will be Jeff Page, who will review with us his many years of poetry presentation in and around Canberra.
Poetry on the Radio is heard Sundays at 4:30 p.m. and Mondays at 10:30 p.m. on ArtSound FM. The program is produced weekly on unceded First Nations country in the studios of ArtSound FM in Canberra. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles. Producer is Peter Monahan. Our theme is from an ancient hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.